You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today, so without preamble, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. You know, it never seems to get any better in California. The anti-law enforcement lobby is now widening to the point where even police chiefs are jumping on the bandwagon. I'm going to tell you something right now that makes me lose my mind. I'm going to read the headline first, and then we'll talk about it. Police chief pulls agency out of charity event for fallen officer because Republicans invited. Yeah, you heard me correctly. This is in Thousand Oaks, California. And the chief over there is a guy named Tim Hagel. Tim Hagel. I hope I don't run into him anytime soon. So this is in Thousand Oaks, a charity event planned in honor of a sergeant killed in a 2018 mass shooting at a country music bar in Southern California, has been postponed indefinitely, reportedly because the police chief didn't want Republicans invited. I don't even know what to say. Well, yeah, I do know what to say. This guy is a disgrace. He is an absolute disgrace. Police officer Ron Hellis gave his life, was murdered in the line of duty. An organization that raises money for the families of fallen officers had a what they call the Blue Bowl. It's like a flag football tournament scheduled to raise money. The Blue Bowl, it's a charity flag football game, right? So they had this thing all planned. They had the honor guard from Thousand Oaks. They had bagpipers. They had this whole event planned. Well, then the police chief Hagel found out that there were going to be speakers there from both parties, Democrats and Republicans, but there was going to be a Trump supporter there, Scott Baio, you know, the actor. And when he found out that somebody that was a Trump supporter was going to be there, he canceled it. It's incredible. So I guess I don't know what to do here. I'm just it makes me insane and the Ventura County Sheriff's Department issued a statement saying the Blue Bowl event was represented as a charitable flag football tournament to raise funds for the family of Ron Hellis, an event that would honor Ron's memory and provide support to his wife, Karen, and son, Jordan. As the event began to materialize, we became concerned with the behavior of some of the organizers of the event. Although I believe the organizers had good intentions, the event was moving in a direction we no longer felt comfortable supporting. And the chief, what did he say? Chief said, yeah, this ain't going to work for us. You're not going to support this with the honor guard? And he says, nope, we're not bringing the honor guard. We're not coming. We're not going to be there, not supporting it. It's unbelievable. I'm sick. I'm sick to hear about it. So not just the police chief, but the sheriff as well canceled the event. So the leadership issues facing law enforcement around this country are legion. And we don't have to go too far to see example after example after example of police chiefs so out of touch with their officers, so ingrained in a political agenda that they are literally not not following a moral path when it comes down to supporting their own officers. For instance, Fairfax County officer suspended after holding driver to be detained by ICE. This is another insanity. A Fairfax County police officer makes a car stop. The guy is suspected of DUI. He's doesn't have any proper ID on him. The officer does exactly what he's supposed to do. He runs him through a computer check for wants and warrants. Determined there's a federal warrant for his arrest. A federal warrant for his arrest by ICE. So he does exactly what cops are supposed to do. He contacted the originating agency to verify that they wanted him. They said yes. They came down and got him. They arrested him. And what happened? He gets suspended. His chief suspends him because, of course, it's a sanctuary city. And what this chief, the chief actually talks very derogatory terms about the officer, and talks about his procedures and how this guy, this police officer, didn't do what he was supposed to do, that, people can't face, responsibility for their actions. I mean, it's just crazy. So here's a chief that suspends one of his cops for actually being a cop and doing what a cop does. This is another example of the pathetic leadership that's facing so many police agencies, but we don't stop there. Let's talk about the police chief in Louisville, Kentucky. This guy's great. Louisville Metro Police Chief Steve Conrad has survived multiple controversies, a sex abuse scandal involving officers, a historic spike in homicides, and two, not one, but two non-confidence votes, because now he is back in it again. What is it this time? Well, there was a question put to the chief about why the morale is so bad on his police department, why people are leaving in droves. And when he was asked if he was responsible for the morale issues, he said he just isn't responsible for the morale of his police department. I've never heard anything like this. Talk about leadership 101. Here's what he said. I am saying morale is set by each person individually. Every commanding officer in this department has a responsibility, but at the end of the day, everyone is responsible for their own morale. Our sergeants have more impact on the morale of our patrol officers because they're the ones that say yes or no when they want to take a vacation day. They're the ones assigning people to details. They're the ones assigning different cars. So he's blaming the sergeants for the morale because of assigning cars. He's the chief of police, for God's sake. And he refuses to take responsibility for the morale of his own agency. Well, he's taken some flack for this. In fact, he wound up having to apologize for that statement because the city council was so infuriated with him that they called him to task for it. And of course he had to apologize. But so what? What he said was exactly what he thought. And that's the scary part of this. So let's continue to talk about leadership in police agencies. Or in cities, I should say. You're going to hear in the interview room an incredible interview with the union president of the Minneapolis Police Association. And so I was going to tell this story during the briefing room because it so infuriated me, but I think I'm going to just tease you with that right now. And so you'll hang on and listen to the interview room, because Bob Kroll, the head of that union, is a very, very outspoken individual. And when it comes down to telling the truth, he does not hold back. So we'll talk about that. Now, there's so many issues going on. You'll remember the controversial shooting of Stephon Clark in Sacramento, California, back in 2018. If you don't remember it, I'll just remind you of the circumstances real quick. Black suspect, white cop, one white cop, one black cop. They are a ground unit assigned to try and catch this guy who is being observed by the helicopter unit to be breaking into houses and cars. So they get to the location where he's at. He runs from them. They chase him into a backyard of a house. Turns out to be his grandparents' house where he's trying to escape back into. And he's got something in his hand. Now, it's low light. It's not. It's nighttime. The officers yell at him to show his hands. And instead of doing that, he walks towards them and then raises this object. You can hear one of the cops say, he's got a gun. And they open fire and they shoot and kill him. Well, he had a phone in his hand. And why he chose to advance on the police officers and do that sounds like a suicide by cop. Now, do you think maybe one of the factors might be that he had pretty much every drug known to man in his system? Because when they did the autopsy, that's what they found. They found Xanax and Oxycontin and cocaine and all kinds of stuff. So, of course, I'm sure that played a role in his decision-making, but the fact of the matter is, the officers felt threatened. Legitimately, they see this guy walking towards them. He raises an object. They open fire. Well, the protests begin. The cry of racist, brutal cops gets national attention. The shooting is investigated by the district attorney's office. They clear the cops. And then the state legislature, what do? They make this a rallying cry. And now, starting January 1st, they have enacted an entire new law that makes it easier to prosecute police officers for legitimate shootings. That's how the lawmakers of California react when a police officer acts in good faith and utilizes his deadly force option when they feel that their life is threatened. See, in every state in this union, by a Supreme Court decision, it's always been, what would a reasonable officer do in the same circumstances? A reasonable officer, right? Well, what the California legislature has done, they have now added language into their use of force law, which said that the shooting must be necessary. Now, what does that mean? Because in reality, what that means is, because this guy had a phone in his hand, it wasn't, quote, necessary, unquote, because it wasn't a real gun. Now, the cops didn't know that. And what these state lawmakers, I use that term really loosely, what they have done now is give some wording that will make it easier to prosecute police officers in what every other police agency or every other state would say, that's a legitimate shooting. And now the federal government has now decided that this shooting was justified. But it doesn't seem to matter what the reality is. In fact, there was just a shooting in St. Paul, Minnesota, that was all captured on body camera. A police officer is driving down the street. This suspect, black suspect, white cop, bangs on the back of the officer's car. When the officer gets out to investigate, this subject has got a big old knife in his hand and comes slashing down on the officer. Now, the officer, of course, is taken by surprise. He draws his gun, he yells at the guy to stop, and he falls down to the ground. He gets up real quick as the guy just starts overwhelming him with his attack, and the officer shoots and kills him. End of story, right? Well, not in this insane world. Even though the police department, in order to try and avoid some of the usual nonsense that takes place, released the body cam, clearly showing that the officer was under attack. And you know what? It doesn't matter. They are still protesting. They are still demanding justice for this guy. He got justice. He tried to kill a cop, and he got killed in return. That's justice. And yet, people who are protesting, they couldn't care less about the life of the cop. Doesn't matter to them. The only thing that they want to do is put out their law enforcement agenda, their anti-law enforcement agenda, cry and scream and pout and protest. Well, you know what? This is getting mighty old to me, folks. I don't know about you, but I'm getting sick and tired of this nonsense, and it's happening more and more. So I'm a little worked up, just in case you couldn't tell, but we got to take a walk into the interview room, because you got to hear this interview with Lieutenant Bob Kroll.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company Healthy Cell will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is an old friend and colleague and a man of many talents. He is also the head of the Minneapolis Police Union, that is the Minneapolis Police Federation, Lieutenant Bob Kroll, and he has lots to say about what's going on in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Bob, thanks so much for joining me again on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Hi, Randy. As always, thanks for having me.
So it seems like we never run out of topics to talk about with what's going on in Minneapolis. You know, we first spoke several years ago when there was such unrest and turmoil in your city, and the leadership of the police department and the mayor at the time were very, very anti-law enforcement and very politically motivated in many ways to go against the rank and file.
And I thought they were.
I thought that things were going to change when the police chief was basically forced to retire or resign,
after the debacle with the shooting of the innocent woman by one of your officers. And then the mayor was basically, she didn't get reelected. So now you have a new mayor and you have a new police chief. And it, by all accounts that I have heard, the chief is a vast improvement over your last one.
He is. He is. You know, we don't agree on everything, but at least when we don't agree, we there's legal processes in work and at play, and we work through those channels, and it's done in a respectful manner. So there is that. You know, recently the chief came out and asked for 400 more officers over the next 5 years, which is huge. Nothing like that's been done before. However, the mayor, you know, this mayor unseated the prior. Mayor Jacob Fry unseated Betsy Hodges last time, and he came to us from out east, East Coast, and he was a one-term city council member and then ran for mayor. And, you know, the party, the Democrat Party has selected him to be a upcoming mover in the party. That's what our assumption is, and we're a stepping stone here for him. So, you know, last week, the president announced that he was coming to Minneapolis for a rally. He firmly believes that he can take that Minnesota is going to be a battleground state, and he can take it this time. He came close last time, and that was Thursday that he announced that he's coming here. Within hours, the mayor released a very disparaging statement with regard to the president that he is not welcome here because of his policies, views, beliefs. And the following morning was when the chief called me and said, listen, I'm making a change in policy. And our policy has always been that the Federation officials and their designees can wear our uniform with political candidates, with politicians that are in office in various settings. All I had to do was give notice to the chief on who was wearing it and what the function was. And that was it. In addition, I've worn it in media appearances, and they made a sweeping change in policy and prohibiting the uniform to be worn with any candidate. And it, you know, the hypocrisy here is because in past decades, the law enforcement leadership, the unions here supported the Democrats because, you know, they were for the working class people, and unions gave them their support. So they've enjoyed that for decades, and now that the tide has really turned, where we're getting our support at the state legislature is from the Republican Party, where the Democrats think the police are the problem. In all of our encounters, it's, you know, we've got a whole city council that got elected on an anti-police agenda. So that happened in the city. So now we're still endorsed on both sides of the fence. Both sides of the aisle, but we're endorsing more and more Republicans. So the Democrats have now in power in the city are putting a stop to this.
So I saw some very interesting photographs today of President Obama with a whole bunch of Minneapolis police officers behind him.
Yes.
President Clinton with a whole bunch of Minneapolis police officers behind him. And suddenly, the rules have changed.
Right. And in fact, now the difference here, the interesting difference, that was our command staff behind President Obama. Many of them in that are the assistant chief and deputy chiefs now, and others that were ordered to be there on duty against their will, that actually called the Federation and said, listen, they're ordering me here at this, and I don't want to do it, can I? And, it's a lawful order to appear. So not only did they appear, our officers didn't want to be there, and they were told that they would be there against their will. Now we've got officers that just want to appear because of the difference in the Obama administration versus the Trump administration. I mean, it's just a complete improvement. I mean, we had such anti-police rhetoric and agenda for 8 years under President Obama, and the tables have completely turned, where President Trump is a complete police department and military advocate.
The times have certainly changed, and I think that There has been no doubt that this president, President Trump, has been a complete supporter of law enforcement since way before he even got elected.
Yes.
But as the president, he's put forth more effort to make the lot of the American police officer better, both by enacting regulations. He has shown his respect in so many ways, including lighting up the White House in blue during Police Week. So he's been a supporter, and so did your chief give you any reason why suddenly this change is taking place?
No. And he, with the relationship, obviously he's an appointment. He has a direct report to the mayor. He told me that, hey, I'm changing the policy, but within hours of the president's announcement that he's coming here, it changes. And then another interesting twist to this with regard to policy changes on the police department. If they're proposing a change in current police department policy, they send myself, our labor attorney, and several other people identified on a list that highlights the proposed changes. And we've got what we call policy concurrence. Either, yes, go ahead and change it, I approve. I don't oppose the change, but change it with these recommendations for, changing this portion or tweaking it. Or I'm opposed, and these are my reasons why. And I send that to my board, which is 10 of us on the board, because they're out in different working capacities. They're the investigators, they're the street cops that actually know how most of these policy changes are going to affect them. So I have an opportunity over a couple of weeks where my board members, because they'll say, hey, get it back by, 14 days. And my board members have an opportunity to weigh in and say, no, I don't agree with it. Here's why. We send that, and in past policies, they've taken that under consideration and have not changed or have modified the changes that they had initially proposed in our favor or in concurrence with our suggestions. What's interesting with the way they did this one, there was no opportunity for concurrence. It was just, this is being changed. So we're looking at legally challenging that for a number of reasons. It violates past practice on how it happened, and it significantly impacts our ability to have political influence as a union.
That's really interesting. Really interesting. So not only did this sudden policy change take place, but even the methodology that is normally used to change policy, that suddenly went out the window as well.
Correct. We've had this time last year was very heated because there was all the Minnesota races. We had a very strong police advocate running for attorney general and a very anti-police candidate running for attorney general. We were in commercials with the guy we wanted in uniform. It caused quite an uproar. He didn't get elected, by the way.
And
who our attorney general now is former Congressman Keith Ellison.
Yeah, I unfortunately I'm aware of that.
And guess what's starting, Randy? This is a whole other topic, but they're all one of his first undertakings is a special investigatory prosecution team for officer involved critical incidents. So.
Oh boy.
You can see where that train is headed. But
boy.
And then we were also in the governor's race, which we didn't win either. We endorsed the Republican candidates in the AG's race and the governor's race, and neither one made it. So I don't know. There is the fight over our uniform, but at the same time, in the environment here, the uniform endorsement wasn't doing that much for our candidates. It's kind of an anti-police. It's a trendy thing to do right now. For some reason, in the inner cities where crime is running rampant, they look at it as police is the problem. We've got a lot of out-state support, and a lot of the people reacted negatively to the mayor's announcement, just very disparaging of the president. We've got a lot of people from out-state Minnesota coming into Minneapolis next Thursday for that rally.
I find this so disturbing, the entire political climate, it seems, of Minneapolis and Minnesota has turned severely against law enforcement. And what is this doing to the morale of your agency?
The morale is, you know, again, we got a pretty good command staff and chief in place, so that helps. But the morale, they're just beaten down. You know, the sad part is anything you do proactively, you get in trouble for it. So that whole era of, as you and I knew as young cops, aggressive policing is changing. You know, they're not operating that way anymore. Cops are doing, it's more survival mode, which, plus we're so short, you know, they basically are going out and answering their 911 calls and that's it. And people wonder why crime's increasing. But yeah, morale is, it's a significant effect because, like I said, the whole council, so we got 13 city council members and they all ran, all but two ran on an anti-police agenda.
I can't imagine. It's like your officers are under siege by political influences.
Well, the funny part is the AG, Keith Ellison's son, is one of the council members now. So.
Oh, geez.
yeah. Where does it end, right? But that's what our guys are dealing with. But, you know, the chief did propose a increase of 400 officers in the next 5 years. He wanted to see the department increase that size because right now our strength is part of the issue. We're policing a city of 70,000 more people with 70 less officers. We have not grown to keep up with the population growth. And the chief laid out a very detailed plan. And guess what the mayor and council told him? We'll consider giving you four. He wanted 50 a year for 5 years. They said they're considering 14 for us right now.
14. Wow, that's very generous.
And when you compare us to other sized cities, we've got about two officers per 1,000 people, where comparable cities have about four officers per 1,000 people.
You know, while we're on this topic, I saw some very, very disturbing surveillance videotape of a couple incidents that took place in your downtown area just about a week or so ago. They were violent attacks on by black suspects on white victims.
Yes.
One was an individual who was alone, and then another was, there were two men together. And I've rarely seen that type of viciousness take place. And was what I really found disconcerting is it's not a secret that there are surveillance cameras here.
No, everywhere downtown, everyone should know is on camera, everywhere downtown.
So these thugs that they basically attacked in pack these men.
Yes.
In one case, stripping their clothes off, beating them, kicking them.
These weren't simple robberies, and actually I was on Fox and Friends about this. They showed the footage, and this is an interesting twist. The local media had these stories for a week, and they sat on them. And after I went on national Fox and Friends, it got aired. Guess what? Then they all called.
They didn't even air them.
They didn't even air it. And in this case, like you were describing, if they wanted to rob these people, their cell phones and wallets, they could have just did that. They could have taken it just by the numbers around them. We're talking things of 12 to 15 guys on one guy, and they would just take a turn kicking them, you know, jumping on them, whipping them, riding over them with a bicycle. These guys have some significant head injuries and will have, you know, going forward, memory loss, you know, trauma to the brain, those types of things. But yeah, it was that they celebrated inflicting punishment is what happened. And they got all, you know, there's like 20 that have been charged in a series of these. But yeah, you see this kind of stuff. And who exposed it was the downtown business owners. There's a coalition of some bar owners that are saying, listen, we're losing business downtown because people don't want to come here because it's safe. And you won't increase the size of the police department. You won't walk around. You know, the mayor walks around with an armed police officer assigned to him.
No, well, that's a shock.
So, you know, that's the thing. But, yeah, it was some pretty brutal. And can you just imagine if the races were reversed in this and there was 15 people that actually rode a bicycle and whipped a black man there, the outrage would have been, you know, it would have, there would have been freeway blocking, riots, demonstrations, but this, nothing. You know, no response, just crickets from the city council. Also, a local reporter just yesterday did a story on, you know, what are you going to do about crime? And he only was able to narrow to actually caught him by chance. One city council member, all the rest didn't reply to any request for interview or anything.
I this is so disturbing. And the other part of this is, okay, so these people know that they're under surveillance, but they feel empowered to commit these despicable crimes, even knowing that they're being videotaped. That tells me that they are so emboldened that they don't even think that anyone is going to do anything against them.
The problem is beyond the city council. It is the entire Hennepin County that charges. And like I said before, they get the big three, Randy. That's probation, restitution, and treatment. They do not fear criminal punishment here. Everything is depolicing. And then that, you know, this theory that the criminal justice system is racially biased, you know, so that's the kind of thing here. And the county attorney's office too. Mike Freeman is the county attorney, and he's been no friend of law enforcement, although our federation endorsed him many years ago. He's had a change of tune. But the guy that ran against him last year was even further left, so Freeman stayed in office, but his opponent was all about, this is a county attorney race, where you're thinking, I'm the county attorney, I'm running for law and order. No, it was decriminalize this, decriminalize that. Diversion, you know, instead of the pathway to prison that you're hearing. It was just, it's just this nonsense. And these people get elected.
I, you know, what does the future hold for Minneapolis? I mean, it's so disconcerting that every elected official, basically, from the governor to the attorney general, to the mayor, to the city council, are basically out of control when it comes down to their basically embracing criminality.
Yes, they are. Well, and look no for what it holds in store is look no further than 6 hours away in Chicago. That's, you know, you've got a city with the toughest gun laws, gun control, and guess what? Where's the highest homicide rate going on? You know, that's what's coming. And, you know, the scary part about it is we've got an aging department, so retirements are going to happen. And when I tested, you know, you had 500 to 1,000 candidates testing in Minneapolis and St. Paul for the positions. Right now, you've got less than 200 every time that you're given a test. So what is that going to do to the quality of the officers that you're bringing in, too? Before you had a job that people competed for heavily to get in, and because that's what they wanted to do. But what does that tell you when your applicants have dropped so drastically? No one wants to do this job anymore. And with the chief's plan to lay out things, we're not even talking about keeping up with attrition. He wanted to grow the department that much, and they shut him down. So can you imagine when we start retiring, and they're not growing, and in addition, they're not even keeping up with attrition, and then no one wants to come into it. So these are sad times for law enforcement.
They're sad times for law enforcement. They're dangerous times for citizens. And yet it's these citizens that are voting these people into office. It's like the self-flagellation. And you know, we're seeing nationwide trends like this, where recruitment is diminishing demonstrably, where retention is diminishing. So people are leaving even before they retire. And so we're seeing nationwide what I think is going to be a cataclysmic change in the strata of law enforcement in this country. And you're in ground zero of it.
Yeah, it's it is a very bleak future in law enforcement.
I wish I could say that I saw some light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just strict darkness, you know. And then I was interested to see what happened in your sister city just a short time ago too. There was an officer involved shooting.
Yes.
And this shooting was all captured on body cam, and the officer was literally attacked at the second that he stepped out of his patrol car by a knife wielding suspect, black suspect, white cop. The attack was violent. The officer fell down, drew his gun, told the suspect to get away from him, to stop, and within seconds, the attack continued, and he opened fire and he killed the suspect. Now, the body cam footage was released very, very quickly, because immediately what happened, of course, the hue and cry of another, you know, brutal police officer hunting down and killing a black man. So, yeah. So to combat that, the police department, showed the videotape, but that hasn't stopped anything.
No, after you see that, and this guy was clearly it was suicide by a cop. He was too much of a coward to take his own life like he wanted to do, so he forced a cop to do it. No one wants to be placed in that situation. The guy's on routine patrol and he slams into the back of his car and gets out before he steps out to see what's up. The guy's charging him, but you know, prior to that, hey, we had demonstrations and protests again on the killing again by a white cop of another black man. And no one seems to care about the truth. And then when it's all done, they see the camera, and there's nothing this guy could have done. And by the way, I've learned that, you know, we're so close together. I'm a St. Paul native, and so we're very close together. And this copper was actually in very good physical condition and reacted quickly and did what he had to do, where that could have been an officer not in that physical condition, and we could have easily had a police fatality there.
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, that's true. But you know, the frustration is the facts are literally right in front of your face. The camera shows exactly what happened, and let me go back for just a second. Do you remember when the hue and cry from everyone from the President of the United States, President Obama, of course, down to the American Civil Liberties Union, NAACP, everybody was screaming for body cameras,
yes,
to be issued to police in order to protect the public from those racist, brutal police officers.
Right, right. And whose best friend has the body camera become? And that show the absolute facts, you know.
Exactly, exactly. And so since the widespread use now of body cams, the narrative has suddenly changed. You know, you don't even hear anyone demanding that police be given body cameras anymore. In fact, in some jurisdictions, they're trying to take them away.
They're going the other way now, going, wait a minute, this isn't the result we wanted. Because the reality is if you're accusing officers of doing this, there's going to be some pretty concrete proof of what happened these days, whether it's surveillance footage from independent businesses, whether it's the cities that have them in certain high crime locations, or most likely squad and body cameras. So, you know, the thing that our members are calling for is when they make these false allegations, that they do pursue criminal charges against the people that are doing them. We exactly. saw that in our Jamar Clark. But you know what they did in that one is they send a little kid forth that says, yeah, you know, he was coached. And, you know, you got a 10-year-old kid that's coming in and saying what he's coached to say, because no one else would put pen to paper on a statement that said, you know, the theory, the false narrative that was out there in our Jamar Clark one was that the officers handcuffed him and then shot him when he was on the ground handcuffed, which was all proven to be false. But, you know, it's like that was a big one. That was right up there with, you know, Michael Brown and Ferguson and some of the others. But, yeah, we are, you know, the cops didn't want to wear them just for, like, you know, change the old timers and stuff. But if you're coming on and you're learning how to wear one, it's just part of any other tool you have now where you're actually activating when you're supposed to. That was a learning curve with our veteran officers. But now we're fine. And they're clearing people left and right. I represent guys in internal affairs all the time, you know, and the body camera just becoming the cop's best friend because it's clearing them of the false allegations.
You know, I unfortunately, departments don't have the guts to go after and prosecute these people for making these false allegations.
Right. The complaint, it's still on your record too. You know, it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It's just unfounded. But then all of a sudden, here's this cop. He's got this in the media. We'll bring it up when you're in a high profile incident next time.
Exactly. So let me ask you this. Has there been any thought to filing civil lawsuits against these individuals who are quite literally lying about these?
We have discussed that. Unfortunately, most of them don't have anything. You know, nothing from nothing is nothing. That's the trouble there. You know,
right?
Where if they're a member of some organization or something that has some money attached, but we have discussed that. But oftentimes too, they'll make the allegation and then won't follow up with a sworn statement afterwards.
Right, right. Well, one thing is for sure, the war on cops is alive and well. You know, not only are our officers facing increased violence, literally, almost every day we're seeing a report of another police officer shot in the line of duty. The war against cops is much more insidious than just that. And the examples that you and I just talked about, with the anti-law enforcement attitude by politicians, by a media that is politically driven with an anti-law enforcement agenda, a failure to even do stories on criminal activity that is absolutely astoundingly despicable and heinous. This is all part of the war on cops, and it is having a tremendous effect on the health and welfare of the men and women who are serving.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So
sad, but true.
I know that you're in the position where you can retire anytime you feel like it. And the fact that you're still hanging in there, and I got to tell you, man, you're a very, very strong voice for the people that you represent. You're one of the few that are out there doing, telling the truth about what's going on. And I can imagine your frustration, especially now in the view of this new attack on your rights as law enforcement officers and as citizens, by your mayor Fry or whatever. What's his name? How do you pronounce it?
It's spelled Frey, but yeah, it is Fry.
Fry. And his attack on your rights to even support a political opponent of their thought process. Right. This is truly getting to be like a totalitarian government.
It sure is. Yeah. Well, the people got to come out and realize what's going on and realize they're not getting all the actual news from their local news channels or the main networks either. Again, our local media sat on that story of those attacks downtown until Fox and Friends captured it. And then all of a sudden then they wanted a story. So that's food for thought right there.
It sure is. Well, excuse me. I want to thank you for taking time, Bob, to be a guest on our show again. I have my feelings that we'll be talking again soon.
For sure. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
All right, Bob, take care and thanks for the job that you're doing for your folks.
Thanks. Likewise.
There's something very important I want you to do for me. If you've been listening to the Voice of American Law Enforcement for any time, you know that we are very dedicated to the law enforcement community here. I would like you to go to a website. It's www.thewoundedblue.org. I want you to read about how we at this organization are aiding injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you are a law enforcement officer and you have been injured or disabled and you feel forgotten and alone, this is why we exist. We have a fully trained peer support team, all made of police officers who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, and screwed over. They know what you're going through, and we exist for you. You are the part of the Blue family, and you deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. Unfortunately, many police agencies and cities do not treat their officers with respect and dignity when they are injured, either physically or emotionally. So go to thewoundedblue.org. If you are a citizen and you want to help, please check out how you can join the Wounded Blue. And if you're a police officer or have been, exist for you. So check out thewoundedblue.org. Now, I would also urge you to see our film. It is on Amazon, it is on iTunes, it's the Microsoft Store, it's pretty much every platform you can imagine. It's called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You would be shocked at how the men and women of this, you know, the law enforcement community in this country, many are being treated with such disrespect. Many people, most people, even cops, believe that if you are severely injured in the line of duty, you're going to be taken care of financially and emotionally. In many cases, that is not true. Please watch the film and help the Wounded Blue.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement, we pay our respects and homage to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, I have four names to read. The first is Trooper Tracy Vickers of the Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Tracy Vickers was killed in a vehicle crash on Route 408 near Conway Road at approximately 5:50 a.m. His patrol car struck the rear of a truck carrying construction equipment and became trapped underneath it. Trooper Vickers was a U.S. Navy veteran, had served with the Florida Highway Patrol for 4 years. Trooper Tracy Vickers, Florida Highway Patrol, End of Watch, Friday, September 27, 2019. Second is Deputy Sheriff Sandeep Dhaliwal of the Harris County Sheriff's Office in Texas. Deputy Sheriff Sandeep Dhaliwal was shot and killed while conducting a traffic stop in the 14,000 block of Willoughby Court at approximately 12:45 p.m. A suspect approached Deputy Dhaliwal from behind, shot him multiple times. He was flown to a local hospital where he succumbed to his wounds several hours later. Two subjects were arrested later in the afternoon. Deputy Dhaliwal has served with the Harris County Sheriff's Office for 10 years. Deputy Sheriff Sandeep Dhaliwal, Harris County Sheriff's Office, Texas. End of Watch, Friday, September 27th, 2019. The next is Police Officer Brian Mulkeen of the New York City Police Department, New York. Police Officer Brian Mulkeen was shot and killed as he attempted to arrest a subject armed with an illegal handgun. He and his team were assigned to patrol in plain clothes around the Edenwald houses in the Bronx. The officers were assigned to the area due to gang activity, including a recent shooting. The officers observed a suspicious male in the rear of one of the buildings. Three of the officers exited their patrol cars to question the man, but the subject fled on foot. Officer Mulkeen caught the male and attempted to take him into custody. A violent struggle ensued during which the male tried to pull out a .32 caliber revolver. During the struggle for the gun, the subject was able to gain control of Officer Mulkeen's service weapon. And during the fight, other officers came to his aid, opened fire on the suspect. The officer was killed by friendly fire. Officer Mulkeen was taken to Jacoby Medical Center, where he died from his wounds. He had served the New York City Police Department for 6 years and was assigned to the Patrol Bronx Anti-Crime Unit. He is survived by his parents. Police Officer Brian Mulkeen, New York City Police Department, End of Watch, Sunday, September 29th, 2019.
The fourth officer is Police Officer Derek Bishop of the New York City Police Department. Police Officer Derek Bishop died as a result of cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. He is survived by his wife, two daughters, mother, and brother. He is one of hundreds of law enforcement and first responders to die of diseases related to the World Trade Center attack. Police Officer Derek Bishop, New York City Police Department, New York. End of watch, Thursday, September 19th, 2019. All of these officers gave their lives in the line of duty, serving the people that they took the oath to protect. May they rest in peace. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I would urge for you to check me out on Facebook under the voice of American law enforcement. I do want to hear from you. If you have suggestions for the show, please contact me there and let me know. If you are a Twitterer, you can contact me at LT Randy Sutton. That's my Twitter account. And that's it for social media for me. Of course, that isn't true. I shouldn't say that. I guess I'm also on LinkedIn. And if you want to communicate over there, that works too. So thanks again. Make sure you check out thewoundedblue.org. And feel free to contact me if you have any suggestions or comments at my page, The Voice of American Law Enforcement, on Facebook.